Friday night. The sun has gone down and the darkness is about to creep in. Say a prayer and hold on tight. You're listening to Signs of the Dead, Paranormal Radio, on the People's Paranormal Radio Network.
If I start coughing again during this show, I apologize. You would not believe the heat wave that has hit my city here. I am so sick once again. Temperature goes up, humidity goes up, I get a cold, I start to feel better. A few days later, bam! Crummy weather once again. I am still getting over whatever this virus is that just keeps attacking my immune system, kids. So I apologize if I cough tonight or if I go really, really quiet because it probably means I have passed out. Call for help, please, please. Guest tonight, guys, I'm really looking forward to this particular gentleman. He is an author and a paranormal researcher. His latest dealings actually have to do with, his latest book has to deal with, almost directly and exclusively, ufology, a subject that I find very interesting. I'm not the biggest UFO buff in the world, but I do find it to be a very interesting and fascinating thing. That is, of course, the fantastic Mr. Peter McHugh. He's a British researcher based in Scotland, so this ought to be really fun talking to him. You're probably wondering where Sam is right now. Sam is logged into Skype right now, but he apparently has friends over, so I haven't brought him on just yet. I don't know. Maybe I won't bring Sam on at all tonight. What do you guys think? Maybe I'll just kind of leave him hanging. What do you guys think about that? Would that be too much for me? Would that be bad? Would that be wrong of me? Huh? You know, maybe that would be wrong of me. I don't know. What do you think? You know what? Here's what I'm going to do. I think I'm just going to play a real quick commercial, or maybe I'll even play a song for you guys. And I'm going to see how long it takes Sam to get away from his friend who, you know, probably shouldn't be hanging out with him at this time of night because he lives in the UK anyway, and get his butt on the show. So, yeah, I'm going to play a song, and if Sam is not on the show by the time the song finishes, I just might not invite him on at all. How do you like that, Sam, huh? Keep me waiting, will ya?
Yeah.
Sick, and yet strangely melodic tune from Mr. Bones and the Boneyard Circus. If you haven't checked that band out, guys, I strongly, strongly encourage you to do. Tell them that Glass Ghost Hunter sent you. They'll love me for that. You know what? We did have that banner contest going on, and I did actually, because Sam has been busy, I did actually pick the winners. And I was going to announce them on the show here tonight, but I've decided what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to be posting the winners' names and their banner designs on our Twitter account, which is user ID is Glass Paranormal, and on my Facebook page, user ID Glass Ghost Hunter, as well as the Great Lakes Area Spirit Society Facebook page. We post them on our MySpace page, which is just Great Lakes Area Spirit Society. Basically, anywhere you find us, I'm going to have these banners posted for the radio show here. And I would love your feedback on them, because we did pick two winners, so two very lucky individuals are going to be receiving a ticket to go to the Mid-South Paranormal Convention in August. It's going to be a fantastic event. I really wish I could go, but you know what? I can't. You know why? I got to work. I can't get out of it. It is so hot. I'm doing something very uncharacteristic for myself tonight. I am drinking a very large orange soda. Anybody that knows me knows I don't usually partake of soft drinks. But tonight, tonight I decided, what the heck, I'm thirsty and I got to drink something besides coffee. So, you know what, guys, without further ado, I'm going to call Peter McHugh in. Hopefully we can get him on the line in Skype. It is very early in the morning there where he lives. I think it's about 3 o'clock in the morning. He, of course, like I said, was in Scotland. So hopefully Skype holds up and we don't have any crashes, because I've got a lot of questions I want to ask this gentleman. And I hope you guys ask them as well. If you have any questions in the chat during the interview, guys, just type them and I will, as soon as he's done answering the question, I will post the next question to him, and this should be a good time, guys. Here we go.
Hello?
Hello, Peter.
Hello, Stephen.
Yes.
Yes, good evening.
Good evening. You are live on the air, sir.
Good.
All right, Peter. You seem like a really fascinating individual.
Oh, that's very nice of you to say that.
I've been reading some of your stuff online, and really, really interesting, fascinating stuff. But if you could just give the listening audience a little bit of information about yourself, a little bit of background.
Yes, I've been interested in the paranormal for many years, since I was a teenager, a child, perhaps. I've worked for many years as a clinical psychologist in Great Britain. And retired some years ago, so I've been able to give more time over to this sort of interest. And over the last two or three years, I've worked on a book which was published in February, concerned with paranormal and UFO hotspots. I've been interested in this notion that there are certain geographical areas that may have be home to a disproportionate number of strange events. So that's what the book is about, and it's a subject that's fascinated me for some time.
And what you've basically determined, from what I'm understanding with this book, is that there are real, genuine hotspots for things like paranormal activity, everything from ghosts to UFO sightings.
Well, actually, although I believe that paranormal phenomena do occur, in practice, it's actually very difficult to be sure about the existence of hot spots. There are all sorts of factors that complicate a serious decision about whether an area really is a hot spot. It may seem to be a hot spot because of a large number of reports, but it's sometimes difficult to know whether that could simply be a reporting bias. In other words, if an area has been given publicity, maybe a local author has written a book about the area, or you've got some very active investigators there, it could give the impression that the area is more active than other areas. And yet if you took another area, say at random, and you subjected it to an in-depth study and interview people in the area, you may find that there are just as many reports, but they just simply aren't being reported. So I've sounded that notion of caution, you know, repeatedly, I think, throughout the book. But I think there are some areas that perhaps do have a reasonable claim to have a higher than perhaps expected number of occurrences. Although it's as I say, without comparative statistical information across the whole, you know, area, the whole country that you're, or the, it's difficult to know for sure. The other thing about these so-called hotspots or window areas, some people call them, is that they I think they're rather like volcanoes, that, you know, they sometimes become dormant. You can get an area that may seem to be a hotspot for a few years or maybe a longer period of time, and then it seems to go quiet. There may actually be some places that are permanently hot, but most of the areas that I'm aware of, and most of those that I've discussed in the book, seem to have been sort of places that have had a history of paranormal or UFO phenomena for some time, and then things have perhaps gone quiet, or at least aren't being reported from there now.
There was something very interesting that you did point out in something I was reading, is that you had said that while there might be a lot of these claims in these areas, that there is very seldom actual direct scientific research done into the area to actually catalog all this phenomena.
Yes, it often depends on, I think, chance factors, well, maybe not chance factors, but things such as someone happening to write an article about the area, and reporters taking an interest in it, and then a reputation builds up about it, and which may or may not be justified. So yes, I don't think very many of these areas have been subjected to very extensive, in-depth scientific study.
One question I have, though. We have all these paranormal TV shows on right now. There have even been a couple brand new UFO shows on. And I find this to be very fascinating. And there's this new show, Finding Bigfoot, that's on, and a show I absolutely hate. And, of course, there's the ghost hunting TV shows. Are these people actually doing real scientific research, or do you feel this is just to sort of entertain people, this is just for publicity?
Well, to be honest, I don't know, because I'm not in this country, in the United Kingdom where I live, there don't seem to be that many shows like that. I think you've got more in your country, and I'm not familiar with the details of them, so it would be unfair and unreasonable for me to criticize them. It may be that I believe that some of them do bring on and interview reputable researchers. So from that point of view, they're not sort of just sort of Mickey Mouse programs. But the question you were really asking was, are you saying that are these programs really promulgating a sort of not a very serious approach to the subject rather than a scientific one, is that?
Yes, and my reason for thinking this is because, I mean, as someone myself who actually does go out and do that type of research, my approach is actually very much focused on logging information, collecting environmental data, and making comparisons over time. I don't go to a haunted location, quote-unquote haunted location, stay there for one night, take a few pictures, and then draw a conclusion. I don't take that approach. Yet, on these popular TV shows that we have here in the States, they'll go to a location, they'll film some video, they'll record some audio, take a few pictures, draw a conclusion, and then that's usually the last time they ever go to that place.
Yes. Yes, there have been a couple of series like that in this country. Quite dreadful programs, really, where it's entertainment. It's clearly entertainment, and there's a mixture. The investigation often includes a mixture of very speculative methods as well, such as using a medium. Now, I'm not saying some mediums aren't genuinely psychic and so on, but the pronouncements of the medium by themselves are sort of not very hard evidence, I think, and or someone wandering around the place giving sort of subjective impressions. And as you say, one gets the impression that the investigation is very short lived. It's not sort of it lasts one night. And then you may have the contrasting poles of the believers and then the arch skeptic, you know, the adversarial approach which television programs and love. But yes, no, I agree with you. These programs don't give a very scientific approach to it. The other thing is they possibly encourage people to believe their properties are haunted for rather tenuous reasons. I mean, if people are wandering around a house and saying, well, I'm feeling a hot spot, I'm sensing a spirit or a presence here, there and everywhere, it may be that some people have got problems with the plumbing or something like that, got creaking floorboard and so on, will start making attributions of paranormal activity when there isn't the justification for that.
And let's talk a little bit about ufology, because I do mention on, I have mentioned it in the past on the show that since I was a kid, I found the idea of these strange craft flying in the sky to be a very fascinating field. What exactly got you interested in things like ufology?
I think I've had a long-standing interest in unusual phenomena. And as a matter of fact, I tend to see ufology and the psychical research as overlapping domains. I think there is a tendency among people who are interested in UFOs, with some, to think, well, we're interested in UFOs, but we don't want anything to do with the paranormal. And equally, on the other side of the fence, there are people who are interested in ghosts and hauntings and so on. And yet, if you mention the subject, oh no, we don't want anything to do with that. As if they're seeing the UFO, the one side is seeing the other aspect as somehow not connected. But I think if you strip away with UFOs the obvious sort of cases where it's a misidentification of a balloon or a planet or a meteorological phenomenon, that sort of thing, or even a hoax, if you strip away those sorts of cases and you get to the more sort of high strangeness ones, then there's really no difference in a sense. It's very, very much in the paranormal domain. And I think the underlying explanations, I mean, this is very speculative, but I think the underlying explanation for these phenomena similar explanations may apply to both categories, hauntings and apparitions as well as UFOs. In fact, I'm inclined to think of UFOs as being, in a sense, equivalent to ghostly manifestations, perhaps involving the very same causal factors.
I've actually had a few people on the show in the past that have said that things like UFO sightings and crop circles and everything that we associate with stuff that comes from another planet very much is in some sort of direct correlation with areas that have hauntings and paranormal activity, ghosts and ghost sightings. And here, of course, in my home state of Wisconsin, we seem to have both. We have a lot of high incidence of people seeing strange things in the sky, and we also have a really high volume of hauntings. And there are some people that have actually speculated that these phenomena, even though they seem vastly different simply by the reports and by what people claim they're seeing or witnessing or whatever they're finding, seem to have some sort of direct correlation with each other.
Yes. Well, one view that I hold is that the explanation, there are various theories, and I discuss a lot of theories in the book, but a theory that I'm leaning towards is what I call the higher intelligence theory, the idea that ghostly manifestations and UFO phenomena are really theatrical constructions. They're theatrical, they're pantomimes, in a sense, created by a higher intelligence, which has various tools at its disposal. For instance, if it wants to make people see an apparition, it can do that by maybe causing hallucination, or it may actually produce a temporary physical phenomenon. And similarly with UFOs, when people see UFOs, or even if they're detected on radar, that may be a phenomenon that's generated just for the moment for some purpose. In other words, the UFOs, after they're no longer being seen, they don't exist somewhere else. They haven't gone back to another planet or another dimension, or cloak themselves in some sort of ultra sophisticated stealth technology, they actually cease to exist. But the whole performance is a piece of theatre that's sort of imposed on us, and that I think that people tend to perhaps take the phenomena too literally in that sense. In other words, I'm not saying they're purely imaginary. I'm saying these are genuinely paranormal phenomena, but they may be just constructions of some sort of trickster-like intelligence that's able to manipulate our perceptions and produce physical effects. And the same explanation could apply to things like Bigfoot, those cases that aren't hoaxes or inventions. These sort of animals that appear out of unexpectedly, where you wouldn't expect them to see, and they mysteriously vanish and disappear. Again, that could be a sort of paranormal theater. And in other words, the creatures aren't really existing somewhere in the woods. When they're no longer being seen, then they haven't slipped away into sort of deep foliage. They've actually ceased to exist in a sense at that point, because the purpose of the little dramatic performance has been fulfilled. Now, what the purpose is of the intelligence, I don't know. I mean, one can speculate, but I'm not sure. But I wonder, I mean, this is purely speculation, of course, I can't prove it, but I do wonder whether these are performances, these are dramatic performances, to say, rather than literal existing creatures or objects that are out there and just not being seen when we don't see them.
That's a really good point, because as people have pointed out over the years with things like Bigfoot, there may be a lot of sightings, but there's very little evidence, physical evidence, left after the fact, and even that has so much speculation behind it. Areas where people have sighted Bigfoot is only spotted usually for a couple of brief moments and then not seen again. Same thing with UFOs. They're glimpsed for a few moments in the sky. They seemingly, quote-unquote, vanish. Apparitions are seen walking through a hallway, then they disappear, and they're not spotted again for usually sometimes several years. So I think that is a really good point you're making. And if this is higher intelligence, and it is interacting with us, is this merely for the purpose of observation? I mean, is it attention getting? Is it just to keep our minds working and curious about the natural world around us?
I don't actually know. One of the things that makes me, one possibility is that it's a kind of dropping hints, a bit like a kindly uncle posing puzzles to a child to try to get the child to think more deeply, or riddles and so on, to try and stimulate the person's thinking. Or it could be in the same vein that if this higher intelligence perceives us as a particularly official science, as it were, which can be rather bigoted in a way the official views. And it could be dropping hints that our conception of reality is limited. And if every now and again it kind of produces some sort of odd manifestation that isn't quite consistent with our limited understanding, it could be a challenge. On the other hand, there could almost be a malicious aspect to it, or there may be a malicious aspect to it. It may be a bit like a sort of sadistic human playing with an animal in a kind of slightly mischievous way, or even a malignant way. I don't know. But one of the things about paranormal phenomena is that they do have a very... and UFO phenomena, they do have a very theatrical character. When people sometimes report UFOs, which are very large and very obvious lights, it's not as if it's not sort of suddenly catching a quick glimpse of a fox walking across the forest path and it's here and gone. You know, these things really sort of tell you they're there by having all these glowing lights and so on, which makes me think it is it's an attention-grabbing. It's deliberate. It's not accidental. It's not part of some necessary engineering of a craft. It's more to do with its effect on the perceiver. There was a case in I've mentioned in the book. I've cited an author called Tom Powell, who an American author who has written a book called The Locals about Bigfoot. And Powell seems to be open-minded about the paranormal possibilities. And he cites a case of two people who are out hunting in Oregon. and they came into a clear cut in a forested area, and they saw this a large creature, which one of them described as a sort of Neanderthal or something like that, and a very large sort of Bigfoot type creature. And as they looked at it, it sort of shimmered, and it was walking away from them at one point, and it shimmered and just vanished before their eyes. And yet they did find footprints. So it was a sort of mixture of physical and not physical, which again is consistent with this idea that these creatures aren't really permanently existing things. They may be temporary constructions. Unless, of course, one argued that the creature had disappeared into another dimension, but I'm suggesting that we don't even perhaps need that explanation. It may just be as theatrical a production.
That, you know, I actually, until you mentioned that just a moment ago, I never actually even considered that. But that is a really good thought. It kind of reminds me of something that my my science teacher used to tell me back when I was in high school. And when I brought up the subject of UFO phenomena, he had said to me, if this is an advanced intelligent race from outer space or another solar system or however you want to think it, they're not going to show us how advanced their intelligence and their engineering is by flying 40 miles an hour through the sky and then crashing into everything.
Yes.
So, excuse me. I always thought that was actually kind of a funny explanation. I'm gonna actually get my co-host Sam on the line here, since he just arrived a little bit late here, Peter.
Yes.
Let me just add him to the conference call here. I apologize for coughing. Hey, Sam.
Hello.
Hey, welcome to the show. Say hi to Peter.
Hi, Peter.
Hello, Sam.
Hello.
Sam, you just missed a really fascinating discussion. Shame on you.
I'm sorry.
Shame on you. All right, Peter, let's talk a little bit about... I want to go back, because, again, we usually do talk about a lot about ghosts and things like that, but since the ufology subject has come up here, and it is a real, real strong subject in the book, I want to go back to this idea that we have. And there are, of course, a number of TV shows that are more like documentaries that talk a little bit about it. But it has been suggested that with things like UFOs being sighted and these paintings that have been found from way, way, way back from ancient civilizations, it's been suggested that intelligent life has actually visited this Earth, and that it has helped to actually sort of build and evolve these civilizations. Now, I think it's a fascinating idea, but obviously there's no real direct evidence for this. But what are your thoughts?
I just don't know. I'm completely open to the possibility that could be so. To be honest, I think it's best to keep an open mind about all these things and not to be too attached to any particular theory and not to, you know, not to exclude possibilities. But I'm open to the possibility that's so. But again, if people in ancient times did see UFOs and they drew them on the walls of caves and so on, again, the question arises, were they seeing physical objects that had some kind of permanent existence, or were they also experience, if this theatrical idea is true, was it again a kind of theater that they were experiencing as well? There may have been some physical incursion as well. I honestly don't know.
I mean, I find the idea fascinating, and some people argue very much that it is possible that they have influenced life on this planet and that there were visitations. But with, yes, what you had said before about this maybe just sort of being a sort of theatrical thing.
Yes.
Excuse me for coughing. It is, as you said, it is entirely possible that there is some purpose to it, but it's not a directly known purpose. I mean, it is possible that there... I mean, when we look at UFOs today and how they influence people and how they open their minds, particularly, yes, people that have been skeptical about the possibility of anything like that, they, yeah, see it, something in the sky, or they have an experience, it's life-changing for them.
That's right.
And
it's interesting with UFO sightings that the do seem to be a disproportionate number of them over sensitive places such as nuclear missile sites. There's a researcher in the States called Robert Hastings who's extensively researched this matter and has written quite a thick book, a 600-page book, which I think is going to a second edition shortly. And he's documented a lot of evidence suggesting that people at missile sites have testified, you know, people in the US military or ex-military personnel have testified to these incursions, and even to the extent of the firing sort of operations of these missiles being interfered with temporarily. Which again is interesting. I mean, one possibility is that these are physical incursions. Again, it could be that the higher intelligence, that notion is true, is again trying to signal something or trying to pass a message, or maybe simply telling us that, look, you know, we're not alone, as it were, and there is something keeping an eye on us, which maybe isn't too happy about some of the things we're doing. On the other hand, having said that, I'm not aware of any evidence of paranormal activity, whether it be UFOs or anything else, actually stopping environmental degradation, overfishing, deforestation, all that sort of thing. So if we are being given warnings, maybe that's all we're being given. Maybe we're not actually being interfered with too directly, although obviously some people do come across in UFO sightings. So, you know, there are reports of people being harmed. But generally speaking, it seems to be, if it is a warning, that seems to be all it is at the moment.
No, I agree with that. I remember back here in the late 1980s through the early 1990s, the UFO craze was huge here. And people had even written books about how we're being told that these are the end times. We're being told you're destroying the planet. You're destroying the ecosystem here. You're killing everything that is going to sustain life here, and then the next thing to die is going to be you. And yet it does seem that, you know, going, you know, back 25 years, that for us, you know, with our lifespans, that is a good long chunk of time to be waiting for a direct action from whatever this force is, whether it's up above or wherever you want to place it.
Yes.
But if it is just a warning, like you said, and it very well could be that perhaps that really is all it is, just sort of saying, hey, wake up, pay attention, and then that's it.
It seems to be a very ineffective warning, doesn't it?
No, I agree.
People like you and I are listening to, are interested in the subject, but the politicians and the people who are more directly responsible for this degradation of the environment, they never probably pick up a UFO or paranormal book.
No, this is true. This is true. I agree with you there.
There's an author called Christopher O'Brien who's written about this. I think in the States it's called, is it the San Luis Valley? It's in Colorado and it runs down into New Mexico. And that area has seen quite a lot of, had quite a few reports from it of UFO activity and also cattle mutilations. And O'Brien speculates in one of his, I've got one of his books, he speculates, maybe it's passing as a speculation to someone else, but, or he said, I can't remember, but that the cattle mutilations could be a sort of a manifestation from our collective mind about the damage that's actually done by the cattle industry, because cattle ranching worldwide is actually quite environmentally destructive. In the Amazon, for instance, a lot of the clearing of forest is apparently to make room for cattle grazing for profit, and then even some forests is also cleared to provide for growing crops for cattle feed, and of course then that land degrades very quickly once the forest is cleared, so they then clear more forest. Also, I think cattle produce a lot of greenhouse gases, you know, through flatulence, but it's a slightly sort of speculative notion, the idea that the cattle mutilation phenomenon is a sort of symbolic or indirect way of warning us about that. It doesn't sound terribly obvious, but it's an interesting, intriguing notion.
Yeah, that really is. And again, it goes back to what you had said about a lot of these things being very theatrical. They're extremely visual, and in most cases of sightings, the bulk of them, everything is visual. It's seen. but it's seldom photographed, it's seldom videotaped. Those are the...
A man I know, it was more of a haunting type phenomenon, but told me of an interesting experience he had. He experienced, over a period of time, various manifestations in his home, and other members of his current family have experienced things as well. And but one thing that particularly disturbed him, one morning he went to look for some money from a tin, a metal container in his living room, and I think it was £3 £20 notes. I'd have to check the book. It's in the book, this thing, but I think it was something like £3 £20 notes were folded up in this tin. But when he went to find the money, the money was missing. But when he came back at lunchtime, there were 3 uncreased £20 notes lying on the coffee table. The matching sort of amount of money, but the notes didn't seem to be creased. So it was a very sort of attention-compelling theatrical performance, which certainly doesn't seem consistent with an idea that it was some sort of random event. It certainly had a sort of theatrical or purposive character to it.
And yet, the question is, what exactly was it trying to tell him?
Unless, of course, it was intended not to tell him anything, but just to scare him.
And that could be. Going back to what you had said before about maybe perhaps there is some sort of almost a sadistic intent, not directly cruel, but in a way kind of playful, kind of mischievous.
Are you aware of the Skinwalker Ranch case in Utah?
I am not.
Ah, right. If I could spend a few minutes on that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Might be of interest. There was a book was published in 2005 by two people. One is called Colm Kelleher, who's from Ireland originally, and he's a biochemist by background. And the other was George Knapp, who's an anchorman, a radio or TV anchorman, and sort of journalist based in Nevada, I believe. And this book called Hunt for the Skinwalker is about a ranch in northeast Utah in the Uinta Basin. And it's quite a dramatic story. Just before I give you some details of the case, I should say that some information has come to light more recently suggesting that some of the details in that book are incorrect. But the gist of the story is this, that a family bought the ranch from the previous owners in 1994. And they then started having a series of very bizarre encounters. They allegedly had an encounter with a large wolf-like creature, which they attacked one of their calves. This is what's claimed in the book anyway. And they sort of in turn shot the creature. But it seemed to receive several bullets, but it didn't seem to be harmed and walked off. And the father and I think one or two of his sons followed it, but they didn't. They seemed to have just disappear. Objects went missing. UFOs were seen. Blue orbs were seen. And at one point, some of the farm dogs chased after these orbs into a bit of woodland. And then the next day, the dogs' incinerated bodies were found. An unworldly orange structure was seen in the night sky, an organization called NIDS, the National Institute for Discovery Science, which was funded by the American wealthy businessman called Robert Bigelow, bought the ranch in 1996 to study the phenomena. And Kelleher joined this organization on the scientific side, and they sort of monitored the ranch. The man who'd lived there with his wife and family before, the man stayed on, was hired as a ranch manager. Now the NIDS team themselves experienced some phenomena, at first not very many, but then quite a lot of phenomena were experienced, but then they sort of fizzled out. Among the phenomena, as I say, cattle mutilations and the death of these animals, which, going back to your point, if these reports are true, It does suggest that this intelligence, whatever it is, isn't entirely benign. And of course, there are other cases as well where people have reported come to harm through encounters with UFOs.
It's been suggested, and that is a really fantastical sounding case there. It's been suggested that when these things are happening, and some people suggest this, and I don't know how I entirely feel about this, but it has been suggested that in some of these areas where all this stuff seems to be happening and it's reported, and they have lots and lots of witnesses that see it all at the same time that everyone else is seeing it, they've suggested that this is the result of some sort of a mass hallucination caused by something environmental.
Yes. Now, the problem, though, with this particular case is that, you know, if people are finding cattle that have been, you know, mutilated, obviously that wasn't hallucinatory. There were other manifestations which weren't hallucinatory. For instance, they had security cameras set up on this place, and then mysteriously, unless it was done by some kind of trickster, of course, the wiring from one of the cameras was ripped out. The incineration of the dogs obviously wasn't hallucinatory. A problem I find with the hallucination theory, which has been advanced, of course, by the Canadian neuropsychologist Michael Persinger and colleagues, that natural magnetic fields and so on from maybe in seismically active areas or even from man-made electrical apparatus can affect the brain and induce hallucinations. The problem I have with that sort of theoretical approach is, although there does seem to be some supporting evidence for it, it doesn't readily, to my mind, explain collective hallucinations. For instance, if two people are driving along in a car and they both see the same apparition or they both see the same UFO, it's not the sort of thing I would expect if this experience were due to a magnetic field. You know, if you and I were subjected to a magnetic field at the same time, and it did, of course, it altered consciousness in some way, I imagine our respective experiences would be different.
Right. We would.
Equally, you know, if you and I were given LSD at the same time, I wouldn't expect that we'd both have started, the trip would begin at precisely the same moment, but have exactly the same content. It suggests to me that these experiences are choreographed. Again, sort of they're orchestrated. They're not random. They're not sort of the random chaotic byproduct of a disordered brain.
Right, because of course, if people are having hallucinations, their hallucinations tend to be vastly different. They both don't see and describe the exact same hallucination. They don't share it, the hallucination.
Well, I can accept the idea it's a coordinated hallucination. There is a theory of apparitions, more than one theory, perhaps, that apparitions, some ghostly experiences, are actually telepathically mediated hallucinations. In other words, the actual ghost is hallucinatory, but the fact that the person is seeing the ghost or two people at the same time, it's a paranormal event. It's not a purely subjective hallucination. There is that type of theory, but again, this more mechanistic magnetic field theory thing isn't suggesting it's telepathy. It just seems to be basically suggesting that the brain is influenced by these fields, and then it induces fantasy hallucinations and that sort of thing, which it doesn't really explain, as I say, these coordinated hallucinations or apparitions.
And they've done some lab experiments where they have exposed people to high electromagnetic fields, and they can get things like chills, they can get their hair standing up on end, they can have to some degree certain levels of hallucination. And of course, that's in a very controlled setting where you can directly, intelligently apply this electromagnetic field. And is, of course, doesn't exist the way we find it existing in nature, where these fields aren't isolated and directed at these individuals. And it was about a year or so ago, I began to speculate that perhaps if paranormal phenomena, if there is a direct correlation between that and electromagnetism, if there is an intelligence behind it, and we know that our bodies are affected by these fields and our minds are affected by them, if there is intelligence behind it, could it use that energy to create these hallucinations, to create these manipulations of the environment? As it, so that way, instead of actually seeing something, the reason that a few people see it and a few people don't, and yet it can't be photographed or it can't be recorded on audio, like somebody hears a voice whispered in their ear and the person next to them doesn't hear it, is because it's manipulation of that person's body.
Yes. No. I think I can understand what you're saying there. It could also, I suppose, be that if there is a magnetic field of a certain type or frequency that can affect the brain, it may lower the threshold for a paranormal experience without necessarily causing the experience itself. It could be, I suppose, that if the particular house. It is subject to unusual geomagnetic or magnetic fields. The fields themselves don't generate the ghostly phenomena, but they loosen the filter that allows the experience to pop through, as it were. So I can't dismiss this magnetic idea entirely. One area I've looked at in the book is the Yakima Indian Reservation in Washington State, in the northwest of the United States, and that reportedly has a history of UFO and haunting and Bigfoot phenomena. And my main source for writing about that was a book by Greg Long, called The Examining the Earthlight Theory. And Greg Long looked at the area, and he looked at Persinger, this chap I've mentioned earlier, his theories about the magnetic effects from the seismically active areas and so on. And Long looked at the cases of lights being seen in the area, UFO sightings and so on, but he came to the conclusion that this theory of Persinger's didn't adequately explain all the cases. Interestingly, as I say, as well as the UFO sightings in that area, there have been some other odd incidents. Long mentions one or two haunting cases, which are quite interesting as well. One family had experiencing sort of haunting phenomena in their home, and I think one or two of them, at least, or maybe all of them, had experienced UFO phenomena as well. Now, whether that was purely coincidental, I don't know. I suppose it could be, if you're living in a UFO hotspot area, just by chance there may be a haunted house there as well. It doesn't necessarily mean the two sets of phenomena involve the same process or there's some common factor there, but it's an intriguing possibility. One of my acquaintances, I used to, as I say, work as a clinical psychologist, and it was a patient, and I've written about this chap, and I've called him James Montgomery in the article I wrote about him, and he's had a whole history of strange experiences which span these different categories, ghostly phenomena in flats he's occupied, poltergeist-type manifestations, UFO sightings, missing time, which again, you know, underlines this sort of notion that there's a big overlap among these phenomena.
Sorry for coughing. Very humid here. Now,
it's quite warm here as well.
I actually did read that particular article, and one instance you cited in there was where a gentleman, if I'm remembering this correctly, had disappeared for about 15 minutes, and when he had come back, he was clean shaven when he left. He came back and he had about 5 days of growth on his beard. And
That was an article. I think it was a different article actually. That one, that was about the mysteries of time.
His watch was the time on his watch and the date was wrong.
I wrote that article some years ago, and I've tried to find out more about that case. And I found it difficult to get any further, much more detail on that, and I've got one or two doubts about it, to be honest. I'm not sure, in other words, how accurate it is. I wrote the piece in good faith. It was my source had been a book, but I'm not sure, and the author may well have written it in good faith, I'm not doubting that, but I'm not sure how well authenticated that case is. That's the problem, actually, with quite a lot of the cases I've looked at, that if you do look at some of these reports, you can sometimes find contradictory reports and divergent testimony. There's one particular area I looked at in the book where it was dating events going back to the 1970s in Wales, in Britain. There were two particular locations within this general area, and three books were written around that time describing these events, and all three books give different versions of accounts, and it's very difficult to know what really did happen when you get divergent accounts like that. I mean, the ultra-skeptics, which, as soon as they see one little discrepancy, they try and dismiss it all as nonsense, which I think is throwing out the baby with the bathwater.
I agree.
But when you do get these divergent accounts, and there's sort of the implication here is that there's been some faking or some, you know, at least in testimony. I'm not saying that the people who wrote the accounts were lying necessarily. It could be that they were fed incorrect information, or it could have been a bit of both. You know, one or two. I'm not saying all three books were full of deliberate errors, but when you get these discrepancies, you just don't know. You know, whether the authors have been fed misinformation, or the authors have got things wrong, or whether even they've just deliberately exaggerated or distorted things. So a big question mark hangs over the case. And that case you mentioned about that man, the soldier, and coming back with the beard, the growth of the beard, and so on. I'm not sure whether there's much substantiation for that. It may well be substantiated, but I'm not sure.
I did find it really interesting, mostly because of the idea of time slips, and that, yes. as it's been stated, time really, when you get down to it, for us is just an illusion. It's the way we see the world and the way we view things as things change.
Yes.
But it's something we very much have created. We've created the idea of days. We've created the idea of a year. We base these on things that we've observed. But
it's interesting, though. If we take the view that, in a sense, the future already exists, the obvious question is our sense of free will illusory? Some people would say it is, you know, that, you know, I've been sitting here giving this interview, in a sense, always, you know, from the day I was born. They're still fighting the American War of Independence and so on. It's... I don't know, but what's your own view on that? Do you tend to take the view that the future is already laid out or fixed? Or?
I think that I will sometimes think about the way that it's been stated in Buddhist views, in that we don't really have past, we don't really have future. The only thing we have is one long continuous now.
Yes.
We're talking now. I'm saying this right now. I could say that I said it before. I can't say I will say it, but I'm saying it right now. And that's the only thing that is definite, is the moment that we're in right this moment.
Yes.
And again, time and everything, really, when we get down to it, it's a concept that we've created.
And yes.
When it comes down to science, and as you said before with, you know, biased views, Charles Ford, of course, had said that, you know, the greatest scientific minds, regardless of who they are, have at one point or another been very guilty of extremely unscientific thinking. We all will put forth our own personal opinion on something, and we'll sort of base things around that. And in some cases, when things don't seem to fit, they can be kind of omitted. And certainly, modern science is extremely guilty of this. Reports.
There is one way of keeping free. One, at least one way I know you can keep free will and have precognition, and that's just to assume that if someone has a precognitive experience, for instance, they have a very very detailed, vivid dream of something that actually is going to happen tomorrow, and it wasn't a predictable thing. It wasn't something that could have worked out, and the dream comes true. What's happened is that they've accessed information telepathically or clairvoyantly, and have unconsciously predicted it from that information they've accessed. In other words, the future isn't fixed, but they've acquired so much information about the now that they can actually predict the future. The other possibility is that when people have precognition, they're not seeing a fixed future. They're seeing a sort of a possibility that may eventuate, but may not. And I think there are cases, aren't there, where people have had sort of precognitive visions, and they've actually been able to take steps to avoid the foreseen event occurring, which I suppose fits with that idea that some of these precognitive experiences may be visions of what could be rather than what necessarily will be.
Well, kind of like when people have a deja vu, and perhaps the reason they don't have deja vu all the time is because events change, they choose an alternate path. And in that rare moment when they do dream something or they do think about something and then they experience it again, it was because they followed that exact same path that led them to that moment in time. And I mean, I've had that myself where I've had deja vu, and I don't know really quite how to feel about it when it happens. But I always stop for a moment and I say, wait a minute, where am I remembering this from, and what was I supposed to do next? And then that's usually all the further I go with it. But
yes.
It really does, again, make you think about time and, you know, does time actually exist? You know, is there really a past? Is there really a future? Or are these things just kind of laid out and we really don't have control over any of it? We just kind of experience it as it comes.
In the book, I mentioned an experience of a man who was traveling in Scotland. This was years ago when he was just a child. He and his family were traveling up to the north of Scotland from Edinburgh. And they were in the Highlands, and they, at one point, I think two of them saw, maybe more, saw an old-fashioned locomotive coming up a gradient, puffing smoke, something out of a Western film. And they called to the father to stop the car, and they got out. The father and the boys ran back to the bridge and looked down at the railway line. There was nothing at all. There's not even a sign of smoke. Whether a train like that ever did go along that line, I don't know.
Yeah, and they had said that, and I remember reading this, they had said that they could see at least a good mile and a half down the track going both ways.
Yes.
So if something had been there, there would certainly be, you'd still be able to hear it, you'd still be able to see it, you'd still be able to smell the smoke or the steam or what have you. Again, like something that perhaps was a past event being viewed, you know, something in the world changed, something in the universe changed, something in that moment in time changed, but something allowed, as you'd point out, at least two of those individuals that were in that vehicle to see this.
Yes.
And it was something that I remember people saying the same thing holds true with hauntings, when people are seeing these people dressed in these old clothes, and you know, you're seeing them as they were in life, not as they were when they died, of course. So why do they still have the same clothes? Why are they still going through their day-to-day motions? How is it that you view this, you view it for a moment, and then it's gone?
Yes.
It is definitely a very fascinating subject, and this is really even harder for me to believe. I cannot believe we're down to the last minute of the show. This has been so much fun and so insightful, and it's always great when I can have a guest on that has such an open mind and is so focused on this type of stuff and is so open to the discussion. So I mean, I'm really glad you came on. I mean, to me it's because you're such an intelligent guy. And you've got all these far-reaching ideas, and yet when you lay them all out, they're all equally possible. So, I mean, definitely, thank you so much for coming on the show, Peter.
Not at all, and thank you very much for inviting me onto the show. That's very good of you.
I really wish we could go for another hour here, because I really want to pick this back up.
Well, thank you very much indeed for having me on.
This has been really, really fantastic. Peter, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Take care. Have a good night, sir.
And keep in touch.
All right. Bye. Guys, can you believe we're down to the last minute of the show? That went way too darn quick. Peter McHugh, he's got a fantastic book out. Definitely look him up. You can find him on Facebook. Just type in his name. His books are on Amazon. I will be posting the link for those books on my Facebook page. User ID is Glass Ghost Hunter if you guys want to check it out. Buy the book. He's got a ton of articles he's written that you can read for free online. Really fascinating, interesting, and very cool stuff. But you know what, guys? Unfortunately, we are out of time. But guys, everyone, enjoy your Friday night. Everyone, take care, be safe, and above all, stay scared.